This is Angkor Wat. It sits in Cambodia. It was built in the 12th century as a Hindu temple. It was eventually then, over years, it evolved and became a Buddhist temple, and it's still active as a temple today. It's not in great shape. It was restored. There was a big restoration project in the late 80s, early 90s, and it's still undergoing renovation all the time. It's the largest religious shrine kind of thing in the world. It is the symbol of Cambodia. If you were to pull up a Cambodian flag, the Angkor Wat is on their flag. It is the symbol of who they are as a people. Now, hold on. All these three things are going to make sense in just a minute. I was watching CNN the other day, and I've been watching this show. Anthony Bourdain is a chef in New York City and a restaurant critic guy. Maybe you've seen him on the Travel Channel, traveling all over the world, eating all kinds of stuff. Well, he has a new show on the CNN where he goes to different places and just kind of experiences that place. I watched one the other day where he was in Copenhagen and going to the restaurant that's been listed as the best restaurant in the world. And so most of the episode was about that restaurant and the culture that surrounds it. And the most recent episode, the newest one that was on a couple weeks ago, I think the show is on Sunday nights. The one was on a couple weeks ago was about Detroit, parts unknown, and he went to Detroit. And I don't know how much you know about Detroit, Michigan. Detroit, Michigan is a city that was. It is falling apart. Much of the city has been knocked down. They have to keep knocking down buildings because they're abandoned and people keep on setting fire to buildings. And so there's large parts of urban Detroit that are like forested now, that are growing back up and going wild again. And he showed a picture of this. This is the Packard plant. Now, if you don't know, Packard used to be the symbol of fine luxury automobiles. This plant was built in 1903. At that time, it was the largest production facility in the world for Packard cars. So from 1903 to 1958, Packard was here. And in 1958, Packard shut the plant down. Eventually, they then subleased out the space. But within the last 10 or 15 years, the last tenants have left and it just sits empty. And now, if you live in Detroit, it's a place you can just go. They call it urban exploring. You can just go and you can graffiti to your heart's delight. You can explore. Most of the copper and stuff has been ripped out of there and salvaged. Well, famously, a couple of years ago, two little kids, pushed a dump truck off a fourth floor just to see what would happen. I would imagine it makes a loud noise. And so it's a mess. It's crumbling to the ground. And here's how all these three things connect. So Anthony Bourdain was at this facility, looking at this facility, and he said something that just, you know, when you're listening to something, it just stops you. He said, Cambodia has their Angkor Wat. America has their Packard plant as a symbol of who we are. Whoa. Cambodians have a religious structure as a symbol of who they are as a people. It's their religion and their worship of God, as they understand God, that stands at the center of their identity as a people. And what Bourdain was saying in the intro piece to this is our symbol of who we are as a people is the stuff we build, or the stuff we used to build. I was walking through Menards. I think it was October 16th. It was a couple weeks away from Halloween, at least. It was at least a little bit before Halloween. It was October 16th. And you know what I saw in Menards on October 16th? Christmas stuff. And so I started to go into a rage. Internally, of course. I didn't yell at anybody at Menards. But I started writing an internal blog post that I was going to just rant about. I can't believe, and you've heard this rant, right? You've probably heard it from me, and if so, I'm sorry, all right? You've heard this rant. They do it on the news every year. It's like it's new news. Christmas is even earlier again this year, and all those things, and the self-righteousness, and I can't believe that they don't celebrate the sanctity of Halloween first. And, Thanksgiving first. And so I was doing this rant in my head, and then somewhere along the way, some pastor was teaching on 1 Peter this fall and was teaching something that connected to my rant, and later I put the pieces together and went, oh, that's what that means. In 1 Peter 3, when Peter's talking, remember Peter's talking to wives and slaves and husbands and all that stuff, and he tells them in the middle of all this to live as free people. And we said when we were studying through 1 Peter that, yeah, you might be a slave, but you have a choice to make that you can live as a free person. You can see your slavery as something that you do willingly before God. You don't have to be slave to a master. You might be, but you can live as a free person. And I started thinking about the celebration of Christmas and consumerism and all of those things, and I started realizing that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when Menards puts out their Christmas supplies. I'm not picking on Menards because it's everywhere, right? It doesn't matter if Kmart is open on Thanksgiving. It doesn't matter if everybody else... Kmart, I think they said, is going to be open for 40 straight hours or something insane like that. It doesn't matter. Because what we see maybe more at this time of the year than any other is we see that they just have a different value than the people of God, right? So if you're Kmart, all right, let's just pick on Kmart for fun. What's a successful Christmas season? What is it? There's one thing. Profits. A good Christmas to Kmart equals profits, right? Now, if I asked a poll of the room, how many of you, what is a good Christmas? How high would profits be on our list? Does anybody care about the profit quotient they get at this Christmas? None of us care. What do we care about? Just shout them out. What makes this a good Christmas season? Family. Family? That's it? Joy, peace, love, hope, good food, celebration, time off. What's that? Blessing others? The handle's Messiah. Are you plugging something that you're in? I think all the things that we want out of this season are just diametrically opposed to Kmart. So why do we care what Kmart does? But we get all wrapped up in all these things. And so we start here, and it's November 24th, and Christmas is about a month away, roughly. And we know what we want out of Christmas. But what will happen over the next several weeks is we'll get caught up in this and that, and we might find ourselves a month from now going, it just got all away from me. And so what we want to do this morning is take a morning, and we want to invite you into a holy season. No coercion, no guilt, nothing. But I hope it's an invitation into something you already want. Because I don't think any of us want, at the end of the day, to be defined by the stuff we bought this season or the stuff that we got. But instead, we want to be defined by people who journey through this season in a peaceful, loving, joyful, hopeful way. And so we're going to invite you this morning. And we're going to do so in three acts. In act one, we'll talk about the nature of Thanksgiving and what Thanksgiving means. In act two, we'll explore one family's journey through Advent conspiracy. And in act three, we'll invite you into spiritual practices for this season. For our first act, Thanksgiving. We've asked somebody, basically, we're going to just revolve speakers. There's four of us that are going to teach this morning. I've done most of my teaching. I'm done. I can sit back and enjoy. Our first act is we've asked somebody who's new to our church, like new since July 1st, to come up and talk to us about what it means to enter into a lifestyle of Thanksgiving. So would you welcome Christina Height for the first time up to teach here at Imago.
Just like it.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for letting me share today. I'm really excited about the holiday season. I'm one of those people who jumps the gun, and Amber Masters is as well, and it's really exciting. But I think that the point of it is that we can either enter into this season, starting this week with Thanksgiving, being consumed by how good and how full it is and how beautiful it is, or we can be consumed by it and then it drains us. So I just want to give us some ideas about what it looks like to move toward Advent, starting at Thanksgiving Day. Maybe some of you have seen the posts on Facebook during this month, or maybe some of you post every single day, this is what I'm thankful for. And I'm not here to make any judgments about whether that's awesome or not awesome, but I did it last year, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good exercise to take time out of my day in the midst of it all and find something to be thankful for and post. Some people I heard this year, though, really don't like it, and they think it's bragging, or they're annoyed by it, or whatever reason. And then I came across this e-card, and I'm not sure how many of you have seen it, but it says, November. The month for people who have complained on Facebook for the past 11 months become thankful for 30 days. So obviously, you know, that's not necessarily the case. When I was doing it last year, I hope I wasn't one of those people who had been complaining the entire year and then just decided to be thankful. But I think the heart behind this e-card is that we don't want to be defined by just one month. We want to be, we want our whole life to reflect a lifestyle of gratitude. And so, post, don't post. I think the goal is to move toward what Paul talks about in 1 Thessalonians, where he says to give thanks in all circumstances. So how do we get there? Well, I want to look at a couple verses in 2 Corinthians. Paul's writing to the church at Corinth, and he says, this is 9:11-12, and it's a different translation than you have in your pews, so I'll just read it to you. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. And when we take your gifts to those who need them, they will thank God. So two good things will result from this ministry of giving. The needs of the believers in Jerusalem will be met, and they will joyfully express their thanks to God. So, maybe you're wondering how this all ties in, because it doesn't, like, say the word Thanksgiving in there. But we're going to start, as I was thinking about, how do we go from being complaining people or falling into that style of life once in a while to living a lifestyle that's defined by gratitude, that's defined by how just being thankful and praising God in all circumstances. So I was thinking about this continuum, and we have complaining. Obviously, we don't need to define that too much, but I realize that I do this a lot more than I'm even aware. Like, I can just complain about traffic. I can come home and talk about this unfortunate person who was in front of me and just didn't use their turn signal or whatever, and just go on and on about it, about little things, and we can ruminate about it and talk about it, and it really does no good. I mean, it's venting, but I don't know how much that helps. Just kind of cultivates that style of life. So I think the first thing we need to do to change that is to just change what we are thinking about, to change our thought patterns, to dwell on the good things. Last year during Thanksgiving, our small group back in Tulsa, I made this little Thanksgiving tree. And so when everybody came into our house for our small group Thanksgiving, I like to be crafty and copy things from Pinterest. So I took these little ornaments. I'm like, oh, stop. And, you know, put three things you're thankful for. And everyone's like, nah. So they took out their pens and they wrote, like, everyone wrote almost the exact same three things, like family, food, their job or something. And then we didn't talk about it, but at least we took a moment as they came in from whatever their day was like, and they just paused and they realized, you know what? I have things to be grateful for. We didn't sit at the table afterwards and divulge all the reasons, but we just changed what we were thinking about. And I think it set the tone for the evening to be one of gratitude rather than one of our possible normal nights where we just talk about the things that are going wrong. So change how we are thinking. The next step I think that can really help us is to change what we're talking about, what we're actually saying, what we allow to come out of our mouths. There's this quote also on Pinterest that I saw. It says, talking about our problems is our greatest addiction. Break the habit. Talk about your joys. I was really challenged by that. I think we can allow ourselves to slip into patterns and not know it. So I've been trying to change those conversational patterns in myself and to not just brag about the things I have, but to maybe just purposely tell someone, thank you for doing that for me. Not just out of politeness, but intentionality and talking about what there is to be thankful for. Or having conversations around with other people that you know about what's good in your life and what we've been blessed with. The next step on the continuum is where I'm kind of going to get the most practical. And it's the idea of demonstrating how we're thankful. So this kind of goes back to the verse. In the recent years, I've become really aware of how privileged I am to have been born in America, to have had a loving home, to never have really struggled with finances, to have my needs met at all moments. When I became a counselor, and I sat in rooms with people who are really struggling in their marriages, I would leave and I would feel so overwhelmed with this gratitude, like, oh my gosh, I've never even thought that we would deal with anything of that nature at all. And just come home just so full of gratitude for just having a different start, just starting in a different place than a lot of people do in life. And so with all the things that are wrong, I think we can feel it and we can think about it and we can talk about it. But when we do something with what's been given, when I take the time to give back from that, then it really changes me. And it changes me into living a lifestyle of thanksgiving. So let's go back and read that verse, verse 11. It says, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. So when I'm thinking about the ways I'm enriched, the way God has blessed me, the way that just fortune of the time and place I've been born, I think I can make a list of all the things and I can talk about them, but then I can also add some practical things to that. So what if we take an example of the things we might be thankful for around a Thanksgiving table for food? Most of us in here will probably share a meal with someone, and some of us might not. But for those of you who are able to share a big Thanksgiving feast, what are some of the ways that we could look at that gift and then give back out of that specific gift? I think we can do that here. We can pick up a bag, one of those black bags that, if not everybody might know about, but you take a black bag, you go to the grocery store, you fill it up with extra canned goods and non-perishable items, you bring them back to the church, and then you can bless somebody else in that same area. And give food to a local food pantry, to a local mission. Or you can make a meal for a family that's struggling, or invite someone to come eat with you. Or you can serve at the breakfast club on Sunday mornings and give out of that specific thing. I have food, so I'm going to give food. I'm going to nourish someone else. Or I was talking to Charlie, and he was talking about, yes, well, you know, we get blessed because when we garden, you know, we have this great harvest, and we can share with our neighbors. And I thought, well, I can't do that because I stink at gardening. But that's good for some people, you know. If you're a gardener, then give what you've been given. Then what about family and friends? We have these people in our lives who are enrich our lives. What if we show those specific people through demonstrations why they're important to us? We take somebody to lunch rather than just saying, thanks for being a good friend. Or we offer to watch someone's kids so they can go on a date night. I've also thought about what it means to give of ourselves relationally. So let's say we have a home that we're grateful to have our family in. We have our family around us who's you know, strong and has this relationship and foundation built on Christ. What if we think about entering into being foster parents and opening up our family to another child who doesn't have that situation, or adoption, or building friendships with people who are lonely or ostracized, and opening up our friendship circles and those relationships and giving back out of those blessings we've been given? You can do that with your home. You can open it up and use your home for hospitality, not just for your own family, but to intentionally make the effort to have people in your home. What about in the area of jobs and finances? We can look at empowering others. We can, during the holiday season, we can buy from people who are just starting jobs. There's great organizations where you can buy jewelry directly from artisans who are learning to make jewelry in their own country and then getting it to us here. So we buy these beautiful products and it goes back to them being empowered. You can buy fair trade and make sure people are being treated fairly and that they have the opportunity to make fair wages as they're trying to provide for their families and break these generational cycles of poverty. And you can get involved in micro-lending. And for those of you who don't know what that's like, you can give specifically to people who are starting a business, sometimes in America, sometimes overseas, and they may just need a taxi, money to get a taxi, and they want to be a taxi driver. So Dustin and I have specifically done this. You go online, you make a loan of like $25, and you pick a specific person, and you loan it to them, and then they use that money to invest in their business. They start a business, and as they make the money back, they give it back through the online organization, and then you can reinvest in another entrepreneur. It is an awesome way to give back from our finances and our jobs and help other people find meaningful work. I think that's what God calls us to do, these blessings that we have, these things we have in our lives or the people that we have. If we just use them for ourselves, we miss some of the joy of them. We miss some of what we were designed to do with it. So, like the passage says, you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous. And then when we take those gifts to the people who need them, they will thank God. And then two good things will result from this ministry. The needs of believers will be met, and then they will joyfully express their thanks to God. So hopefully this continues, and this becomes like a cycle. You give to someone else, and they see that you've given, and they're grateful, so they give to someone else. And it just creates this momentum, completely opposite of what the culture is doing, and pushes us toward a lifestyle where our natural inclination isn't to complain or be negative, but our natural inclination as we make our way down the continuum is to praise and to find reasons to be grateful. And as we do, as we do these things and as we change our speech, I think that we'll realize we're not just going to pause at gratitude on Thanksgiving, but will help us dive into it and to have that carry us through the season of Advent and to just approach it differently. So let's carry the gratitude through the season. Let's just not stop at Thanksgiving and name the stuff, but let's really look for opportunities to serve and to give and to love people. And I think that we'll realize that how we live each of our days will begin to be how we live our lives. So if you guys want to look, you got your notes when you came in. It's a half sheet of paper. On the back of it, it says cultivating thankfulness. And we're going to take a couple minutes, and you guys can, if you want to, just think about those questions or go ahead and take out a pen if you have it and write down maybe some practical steps you can make in specific areas of how you want to launch into this season with the right attitude in your heart and cultivating the transformation of a lifestyle of Thanksgiving.
And there's more back there somewhere. Yeah, you can thank her. If you didn't get one, Eric is going to go grab some for you, and just put your hand up, and he'll bring them to you. And we're just going to give you a minute or two to flip those over and to look at that and think about thankfulness before we move to our next thing. Well, you can be thankful in your own time. We're moving on. we put them on the notes so you can take those home, and there's more questions for the rest of the time. But I hope you continue to think about that as we approach the season. Our second act this morning is moving on to Advent Conspiracy. If you've been with us for a couple years, you've heard us talk about Advent Conspiracy. The first year we did it, back in 2009, we actually did a teaching, and somebody generously bought everybody in the church the book, Advent Conspiracy. And just so you know, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to just give you a brief overview of Advent Conspiracy. But if you want a little bit more info, tomorrow on our webpage, there should be a site that goes up. I say should be based on if the guy gets it done or not. That'd be me. And but there should be a page specific to Advent and has resources for you going through Advent, and it'll have a link to the book Advent Conspiracy. So the idea of Advent Conspiracy is pretty simple. It says that everything I said in the intro, that's our culture. We're surrounded. We bathe in consumerism every day. And so maybe what it means to be the people of God is to work against that. And so what Advent Conspiracy encourages us to do is to worship fully. Four movements of Advent Conspiracy is to worship fully, to really enter this season as a spiritual season, to give or to spend less. So to think about how we just spend money, like, you know, there's those family members where you don't know what else to buy them, so you buy them jelly of the month. Like, to start thinking about how can we spend less on stupid stuff like that so that we can give more. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, and we're going to show a video here at the end of our time together. And then the idea of loving all, that it's not just about me loving my family during this time of the year, but really there's lots of people who have lots of needs all over the world, and we're going to talk about a specific one of those in the end. So anyway, I've been trying for a long time to get my good friend Vicki Brown up here on the stage, and so she agreed to at least an interview. So it's baby steps, all right? See, Christina did it really well, and you can, yeah. So, all right, so here's, we're going to do this interview style. I'm going to try not to talk much at all. So I'll put the questions up here, and then if I think of more, I'll just make them up as I go. All right, when we first talked about Advent Conspiracy back in Advent of 2009, what did you think?
I don't have a great memory, so you have to bear with me, but I think that I loved it right away.
Okay.
The idea of giving relationally and spending less money, I mean, I can be a fairly frugal person, so spending less money is very appealing to me. So I think I loved it right away. And it wasn't something that just happened. Like, so this is the fourth year that we've been trying to intentionally practice it. So in 2009, we didn't realize that it would be this long of a journey of trying to do something so intentionally and trying to get better at it over time.
Right. So how do you guys practice it then? What does it look like in your family?
Okay, so the first thing we decided to do in 2009 was we created an Advent calendar. And lots of people do Advent calendars, and you open the little doors, and there's like a piece of chocolate in it or whatever. We wanted it to be something that was a little bit more meaningful than, you know, just opening a number or whatever. So what we've done over the last 4 years is the kids will pick out a different card for every day, and some of them are really simple. We have a different activity for every day. So some of them are really simple. Some of them are color a Christmas picture. Now, while that sounds really simple and it's something simple to do, every single day we've tried to put scripture with that. So if it's coloring a Christmas picture, we want that to relate to the story of God, because the story of God, reaches this huge point in the symphony when Jesus comes to earth. And so we will talk to our kids about being a creator, that God is creative, and so we're made in His image, and He picked DNA as a baby to be a human. And so some of them are really simple like that, but they still have like this component of sharing the story of God. And then some of them are more elaborate. So Joseph was a carpenter, and we want our kids to understand that Jesus had a family, and that family is important to God. And so since Jesus was a carpenter, his dad, our kids will do some kind of woodcraft with Corey to like do some kind of carpentry work. So we do that. Sometimes it's really elaborate, and we get out all the china and all of our crystal, and we put on really nice clothes, and we set our table, and the kids get to set the table with us, and we call it fancy dinner. Now, just because it's fancy settings doesn't mean it's fancy food. Right. It's usually chicken nuggets and macaroni and cheese, but it looks really nice when you eat it. And it's this idea that God wants us to celebrate with Him, and that being together around a table that's beautiful is something that just, it's like deep calling to deep, that we get to enjoy this and God is there enjoying it with us. Mm. So sometimes it's simple and sometimes it's complicated. The second thing that we try that this is the harder part. Yeah. So we've refined our Advent calendar over several years trying to figure out how to space things out, but giving relationally whenever we can. And this involves a few things that are really hard to do. First of all, you need to recognize when you even know a person enough to be able to give to them relationally. If you don't know someone, a relational gift is not going to mean anything to them.
Right.
It's going to end up being for you, and it's not going to be for them. And that's the second thing, is you have to understand that relational giving is not for you. It's for the other person. It is 100% true, pure pouring out of yourself, because it takes so much emotional energy, in my experience, to give relationally to someone. So recognizing when you even have the ability to do that is really hard to do.
So give me some examples. Like, what does it mean to give relationally?
How does that look? Examples of relational giving in our family. I'm going to say this because your parents aren't here. Corey's dad has a fountain in his backyard, and he has had the fountain sitting next to the water pipes for it. He had it sitting next to it for several years, and I think he was just kind of paralyzed with what to do with it, and he's very particular. And so Corey, for Christmas one year, and said, by the end of this year, we will have your fountain installed. Like, that is my Christmas gift to you, is that we will make the effort and the time to come out here to Tremont to make sure that this happens, because you're just at a point where you're stuck, and we will make it happen.
Cool.
So that's one example.
Cool. Which ones work better than others? What's your experience? Like, what makes a good relational gift, and which ones have not worked so well?
I think that one-time relational gifts, like something to anticipate, are better. So like the fountain was a good one. The ones that are throughout the year, like we've given the gift of, we will have lunch with you once a month for the whole year. That didn't really work very well, mostly because we forget about it.
Yeah.
That's a gift, like a thing that lasts the whole year. Those are the ones that are the hardest to deliver on.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. My kids promised me all kinds of stuff this year I didn't get. So. But I'm not complaining about it. I'm just stating, what is. I'm pretty sure Caleb owes me about 4 runs. I still got a month. So how has that been received? Because, this sounds cool, and I think that for many of us at Imago, when we first heard this, we were like, oh, this sounds awesome. But I know for some of us, when we've gone to our families and said, oh, I don't have something big and shiny to hand to you on Christmas, that hasn't always been received well. So how is that?
No, it has not been received well. Actually, towards the beginning, for part of our family, we were not even drawing names yet. And we don't have small families. We don't have huge families, but we don't have small families either. We weren't even drawing names. And I think drawing names is a great way to cut down on the number of gifts you have to buy. So our first step in that instance was to try to even get people to just draw names. Okay? But we were going to draw names for the adults, but not for the kids, because, and I was told this, well, they need to have like a big pile of gifts for Christmas. Like, that's the fun part. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're missing the point. Like, this is not what we're trying to do. But in that moment, like, we're not trying to shove this down people's throats. I mean, Advent conspiracy is a huge deal, especially, I mean, I remember being excited on Christmas morning because I knew I was getting a big pile of gifts. And so I don't want people to feel like they have to enter into this with us. I want it to be more of a journey together. So in the beginning, just even trying to get people to draw names. And then trying to get our families to recognize that, okay, we might be getting fewer gifts, but we're trying to replace, like, the physical gifts. We want experiences with you. We want time with you. We're struggling really hard. There's part of our family that we can't get together with this year. And I feel like we're bending over backwards to try to see them. And the response is, well, don't worry if we don't see you. We'll still send you a big box of gifts. You don't have to explain to my kids why they're not going to see their cousins. Like, that's what they're excited about. And so it's just, we've been trying so hard, and it's just, they're still not quite there of understanding that this is about, we want to be with you. We want to spend time with you, because experiences are what my kids are going to remember. They're not going to remember the toy that broke.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's been really hard.
I am going to jam 1 Peter down your throat again, because it's just, it's fresh to me. But the idea that, okay, so if you go back to other cultures and stuff, and we can look at them and say, oh, they worshipped at the Temple of Artemis. How foolish, how crazy are they? But if you start asking about what are the American gods, I don't know how you can answer the, if America has a god, I don't know how you can answer it in any way other than consumerism, to buy stuff, to define ourselves by what we wear, what we buy, those kinds of things. I don't know how you can do that any other way. And so when gods collide, and so we saw that in 1 Peter, remember? Like, the idea that they were being pushed out of their culture and at the margins of their society because they wouldn't participate in the worship to the gods. You start addressing the gods of our culture, and you will get pushback. When you start saying they don't have to have a pile of gifts, you will get pushback. I promise. That's the way it's always happened. When you even in our Christian families, if you confront the gods of American consumerism, you will get pushback. You will. I mean, that's huge, and we've heard that from many families in our church.
Right, and I don't want anybody to think that we don't buy our kids stuff. Okay, we do.
Yeah,
we try to buy them more intentional gifts. We actually only buy our children 3 gifts, and we've done that ever since they were little, because, I mean, the classic thing is, well, Jesus got 3 gifts, so you can get 3 gifts. And actually, over the last couple years, we've replaced one of their gifts with an experience. So they actually have only been getting 2 gifts from us and an experience.
Because if Jesus got 3, they shouldn't get 3, too.
They look forward to the experience, I think, even more than the gifts, because we usually take them to like an indoor water park, and so it's just a fun weekend of being together. And
So I don't want
anybody to think the Advent conspiracy is not about showing your love through gifts. It's about being more intentional with the gifts that you actually do give, and so that they're more meaningful. Honestly, they're harder. Like, buying a gift at Walmart is so much easier, and it's cheaper than going to a water park. I mean, it really is, but it's not the same. It's not an experience. It's not building a memory. It's not, I don't think, for our family, honoring to what God has called us to do.
Yeah, I know in our family, Jennifer's first reaction, she's not in here, but her first reaction when we first says, she loves to buy gifts for people. Not in a consumeristic way, but she really just, throughout the year, it's not a Christmas thing for her. That's who she is. And so to be told, oh, you can't buy gifts for people, at first to her was like, oh, come on. But the idea is not that we're not talking about not gifts. We're just talking about being relational and entering into something a little bit more significant than I got you this ugly sweater because it was on sale. All right. And I'm not complaining about people buying me ugly sweaters. So last question, because we need to give time to Dustin. What is the most worthwhile part of Advent conspiracy to you? Why is this? Why do you keep doing this 4 years now and on into the future?
I think it feels right. There is something about it. Sitting down as a family, deciding what our Advent calendar will look like, how we're going to purposefully enter the season, how we're going to spend time with each other. There is something about that feels right. And I feel like if we only teach our children that Christmas is about a big pile of gifts, then I think that we have missed the point. And we have not only missed the point for us, we are teaching them to miss the point. And there is that idea of teaching your children something that when you look back, however old you are, and you think, oh, we missed the opportunity to teach our children something good. You know, and I don't think that our parents had it wrong. I think that they just, sometimes you just don't know. You don't know that there could be a better way out there. And so that's why it's worthwhile to us, is that it feels right. It feels like we're teaching our children that there is more. It's about the story of God, and he wants to be with you. And this is a way that he pulls you in It's the mystery of pulling you in.
Yeah. Would you thank Vicky? She did a nice job, right? Stay here. Just stay here for a second. Three announcements related to that. One is beginning next Sunday during the Sunday school hour, there will be a group discussing that book. And maybe you've been through that. I really encourage those of you that have done this for a couple years to go to that Sunday school class because we want it to be a pooling of ideas by not just those of you who are experiencing it for the first time, but also some of you that have gone through it and said, oh, this is what it looks like for us. And so to do that, we are also then putting on the church website, hopefully again tomorrow. I've asked some families who I know who have practiced this to give me their best relational gift ideas. And so we will have a page just filled with, hey, we tried this and we tried this and we tried this and it doesn't work. And we tried, like, just to give you ideas if you're looking for ideas for how to do this. And then the third thing was related to the giving more, and we're going to show you a video here in just a second, is on the last Sunday of Advent, December 22nd, we will take a collection for Living Waters International, and it'll explain on the video a little bit about Living Waters. You can go to their website. I think it's water.cc. We will take a special offering. It'll also be, you can go online, and I don't know when you guys will turn that on. At some point, the drop-down will be there to give to Living Water. And so you can do that online as well if you want to do something for people that don't have drinking water. So we're going to roll the video and move on to our next thing. For our final act, we gave Dustin 3 minutes to talk about spiritual practices. And so Dustin's going to come up and finish us out this morning.
Awesome. 3 minutes. My name is Dustin. Thank you. Well, I will see what I can do with that. So I don't know about you, but in my church background, there wasn't much of an appreciation for the Advent season. Christmas time was mostly just about the gifts and the festivities with a little sprinkling of Jesus on the 24th and the 5th. And so I'm excited to experiment with different ways and how to focus on Jesus throughout the month of December. And I'm glad to be part of a church that encourages us to do that. I was reading an Advent devotional this week, and I saw this quote by Lori Manry. She said this: "During Christmas, we decorate our homes, we adorn trees, we shop for gifts that we wrap and give, we bake holiday goods and let carols ring. It's nearly magical this time of year, the way all people participate, the way everything glitters, the way children grow eager, the way adults become children again. These traditions bring together communities in a special way, and they facilitate a mood for the holidays. They get us excited for what's to come. They set a tone for our hearts and home to welcome the moment. We know how to prepare for the cultural celebration of Christmas, but how do we prepare for the real celebration of Christmas? I'm excited to be a part of a church that encourages us to prepare our hearts for the real celebration of Christmas. That we recognize that this is a special season where we prepare our hearts to welcome, anticipate, and celebrate the coming of Jesus. So we also believe there are different seasons and there are rhythms to life, and this is one of the most critical seasons in the life of our church. So I want to invite all of us to use this Advent as an opportunity to explore, to try some practices that maybe we don't get the chance to around the year, or maybe we've never tried. Maybe we can set aside a portion of our time this season, be intentional with it, and try to encounter this season with the real joy of the season. So there are all kinds of ways people have done this through the years, but I thought I'd throw out just a few ideas. There are different kinds of practices. First of all, ones you can do by yourself, individual practices. And if you want to take note of something that jots in your head, there's a section for this on the back of that page as well. Couple things you could try. Maybe it's journaling every day for the next few weeks, if that's something that's life-giving to you. Maybe you could take a fresh look at Jesus' birth story. You could read the first few chapters of Luke and Matthew and read the birth narrative. Maybe you could just block out a time in your schedule for solitude or Sabbath over the next 4 weekends and just try and protect a time to really reflect. Or maybe, as we've talked about, spending intentional time with a coworker, with a friend who's in a rough part of life. Then there are also communal practices. Charlie mentioned the Advent conspiracy classes we have for Sunday school, and that's an awesome opportunity. I've heard great things about that. There's also, if you look in your notes, there's an open small group. Starting on Tuesday nights this week, Vicki, if you want to raise your hand, and Jody, talk with either of these ladies if you're interested in that. But I think that would be a great opportunity to dig deep into some of these topics as well and get to know some people around Imago better. You could also try starting a new tradition with your family or with your small group, like Vicki was talking about what she's done with hers. I know our small group, we're going to gather together and in a couple weeks and bake cookies all together, like dozens and dozens of cookies, and then assemble them on platters, and then we're each going to go to our different neighborhoods and hand them out to our neighbors as a way to just to get to know people around our houses and our, around our apartment. And then one of my favorite things that we're going to be doing during Advent is Wednesdays we're having two moments where we're just going to take pause and just reflect on the season. It'll be a short, maybe about an hour. We're going to have a chance for Lectio and prayer out in the lounge. So Charlie's going to lead a group of people at 6 a.m. if you want to start your day like that. I will not be there. I will probably be sleeping at that point. But I'm going to be leading the group at 7 p.m., So if you've never been to that, I think I'm excited about that opportunity to just be a short liturgy, but a way to gather for the season and another chance to get to know some other people in a community setting. So 6 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Wednesdays, not this Wednesday, but the following. Then there are also some corporate practices, plenty of good opportunities for us as a church at large. One of them being the Christmas banquet, which is kind of an extension of our Breakfast Club ministry. We're going to be serving a fancy meal to people who are homeless or who maybe can't make ends meet. And so it's going to be an awesome time. I've heard about it. But we still need people to sign up for food. A lot of the other volunteer positions are fulfilled. But Bethany, would you raise your hand? I just saw you. So really high. There she is, wearing red for the season. She's going to be out at the booth right after service. So if you could bring food, it's going to be December 8th. And she has recipes and ideas, so she'll get you set up. But if you're interested in taking part in that way, that would be a great opportunity. You'll also start to notice starting next week with different rhythm to service, with communion and the Advent wreath and singing Christmas songs together. And then we'll have two special services. We'll have the longest night service, which is on the longest night of the year, December 21st. So that'll be a nighttime. It'll be kind of a somber setting where we'll enter the room in silence. And we'll just recognize the darkness that's in our lives, the things we've struggled with over the last year. It'll be a very, very quiet, unique experience. I'm looking forward to experiencing a lot of these things for the first time this year. And then finally, we'll have a traditional Christmas Eve service on the 24th at 4 p.m. So take note of that. But that'll be a good time to just take pause to gather and celebrate the birth of Christ and to sing songs by candlelight. So I encourage you to try out some of these spiritual practices throughout Advent to really breathe in the spirit of the season, the real meaning of this season, and to put more of Christ in Christmas. Christmas, see that? See what I did there? So, more of Christ. And then Charlie is going to share about one more opportunity we have as a church.
Wow. I say some dumb stuff, but I bet you could make a bumper sticker out of that. Let me just say one last thing before we go. I know we ask a lot during Christmas, and you will see all that stuff. We'll try our best. Just watch our webpage, watch the notes. Lots of stuff we're announcing, lots of stuff going on. One special need right now is that, I think you all know, I think I explained periodically throughout the year that we have a fund called the First Fruits Fund that we use to bless people outside of it. It's what funds our breakfast. It's what we use to do ministry to people in our community. But when it's inside our walls, when it's our people, it's a different fund. We call it the Benevolence Fund. And there are times where I know that you all know of needs in our church and you just meet them. There are some of you this week that have just gone to the lights and helped, or you've gone to somebody because you know they need something and you just do it. But then there's other times where you don't know things, and we do, and we use the benevolence fund to help people. We help people. We've helped people with marriage counseling, and we've helped people when they've got into bad places in their finances and they need help. And it's people that you sit with every week, and sometimes those things are private, and we don't share them publicly because it's just not, we can't. But I just want to tell you, we've had to dip into it recently, and the benevolence fund is almost dry. And so the arrangement we have as a church is that when it gets low, I come to you and ask. And so you can either on your check or in the memo line write benevolence, or you can use an envelope and write benevolence, or there's a drop down on the website where you can put money in the benevolence fund. And it just, Josh Graber is our one who administrates the fund, and so he's the one who sees to that, and we push the needs his way and take care of those. So I just want to let you know. It's to let you know, and if you have a few extra shekels and you can help out some people, that's what it's there for, okay? Well, why don't you stand up, and we'll benedict this morning, and I'll say this to benedict us. I don't think that's the way you say that. We're so liturgical. May you, as you walk out the doors this week, as you enter the Advent season, may you be full of thanksgiving. May you conspire against the gods of our age, and may you practice the disciplines that will bring you closer to Jesus in this season. Amen.